by the time these kids are 4 and 5, the first time you play on a sports team is a learning experience, not just athletically, but socially, right?
Welcome back to the Pursuit of Profit podcast. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Tony Westbrock, founder and CEO of Endzone Sports. Today, we're discussing a business opportunity in the youth and adult sports market. We're discussing the ramifications of our sedentary children, the problems with current sport leagues, and why this is an attractive opportunity for someone that wants to make a positive impact in their community. We hope you enjoy the show, and please follow us as we drop new episodes each week on Wednesdays. All opinions expressed by Cliff, Justin, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinion of Phrenosity and Pursuit of Profit. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as a basis for investment decisions.
Well, Tony, your brand, Endzone Sports, it tugs at the heartstrings a little bit for me. I was watching a comedian the other day online do a stand-up bit, and he said, like, remember when kids had casts, like a broken arm, broken limb? He's like, man, I remember going into third grade and it'd be like a VA hospital. Like, everyone's laid up with broken noses and legs and arms. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm like, what was the last time I saw a kid like break something, like get out and like hurt themselves? And so the punchline was, it's no fun. You can't sign mental illness, which is like funny, but not really funny. Like what a horrible thought. I'm thinking back to my childhood. Like, I grew up on a block where like sports, it was life. Like, we would be up at, we had probably 6 kids that were all within 4 years of age on our block alone. And then we had the surrounding blocks where everyone would kind of gather 7 a.m., turn on Metallica, opening kickoff, like whatever the season was. Like, literally full hockey games, touch football, wiffle ball. During the Olympics, we were swimming in someone's pool and running around the block for time. Like, everything was documented. We had marble note. We took it so seriously to the point where if my mom called me in for lunch and I had a miss, like, I was distraught. We had the hose, like we were drinking out of someone's garden hose, right? Just, and it was so much fun.
How about this one? I don't know about you guys, but whenever we would play like wiffle ball or a sport with either tennis ball or something, there was always a sewer on our street. And the ball would go down the sewer and we would go, I'll go get it. I'll go down there and get it. So then we go into somebody's garage and you take a screwdriver and that thing, you know, it seemed like 1,000 pounds at the time, but it was probably a 25, 30 pound mandrel. Try it just to slide it a little bit. And then somebody would pick it up and move it. And then you go down and it was only like 5 feet down, but it felt like you're going into an abyss. And you're like looking for, like, there's no alligators in Ohio, but we're looking for them. Like, we're looking for monsters and, you know, like, get down there and get your buddies out, and then they'd pull you out. But we wouldn't come in at nighttime. The parents would scream our names, and we're like, we get there. We had modifications. We'd start the game here because we knew it was going into darkness. So there's people's light posts in their front yard.
We would move the game to where the streetlights were. Game on. Our parents would have to drag us in at night.
It was so much fun. I got stitches here one time because I went to catch a pop fly in one of these playoff games in our neighborhood and went right into the side of a light post in somebody's front yard and just ripped it open. I just kept that playing and we were like, no, you really need to get that taken care of. I'm like, ah, sorry. I got blood coming down my face. I'm only like 8. You know, I don't know any better.
I banged my mouth on a fire hydrant. It's like, give me a sip of water. Let's keep going. We're good.
The best part were the dares, though. You know, we had a tunnel that went underneath the street, and you couldn't see light through the end of it because it curved a little bit. And only about 2 kids in the neighborhood actually ventured that 100 yards all the way through. And it was at the deepest knee deep, but it was dark, and it was, you know, 4-foot little tunnel that went under a road. It's just like that Stand By Me kind of old school little dares. You know,
as we got older growing up, then we start playing in competitive sports leagues and travel baseball. We went to Ohio. We grew up in Long Island in New York. We were in Ohio. We were in Virginia. We were all over the country. Multiple games a week, doubleheaders on the weekends. And we grew incredible relationships. I mean, these are still my best friends till today. I'm in my 40s now. Our families are all friends. Parents are all like it. So to think that there are kids who are missing out on that and why? So I start looking into this, and you tell me, like, there's an article written in New York Times. It's an opinion piece, so take that with a grain of salt. You tell us what you're seeing out there. It's titled, Why So Many Kids Are Priced Out of Youth Sports. Basically saying in the urban areas, they just don't have access to leagues and things like that. You go into the suburban markets, and it's basically for families that have a ton of free time, because you do need a lot of time, and they have a ton of money. And wealthy families are basically using it as a way of buying their kids into top schools, elite schools. But these leagues have become all about, like, they're highly competitive, very expensive. And then I look and see that a lot of schools are cutting phys ed budgets. So it's like, what's happening? We talk about make America healthy again. We have this massive obesity rate. Kids are glued to their iPhones. They're not going outside and playing. They're not just getting sunlight and being active. It doesn't have to be highly competitive. Recreational sports. Tell us what you're seeing, why you started this, and you're helping to solve this problem. You're making the sports accessible.
Yeah, I think at the center of a lot of the problems is just bad parenting. Kids want to do what kids want to do, but at some point, a parent has to step in and say, no, this is what you're going to do, right? You know, a lot of us, we're having fun talking about stories of being outside and outdoors. A lot of ways you learn so much about friends and relationships and sports and discovering different things having done that. But if I didn't have parents or where I grew up, if there wasn't a culture that's what we did, who knows? If the cool thing to do was just to park yourself behind a computer and play games and gaming all day long, maybe that's what we would have done. But I'm fortunate that we grew up at a time and a place where it was just about maximizing every ounce of sunlight we had to just have fun and just activity. We were always active. Like you said, it didn't matter what the season was. We were out playing. In terms of segue, that's something that's always on my mind. The pricing out structure of youth sports, probably a little different discussion. I think there's a lot of validity to that statement. You know, nowadays, AAU, travel ball, some of these more competitive programs, you're not only paying thousands of dollars just to participate, but you've got travel involved, hotels, coaches are being paid and compensated. And the reason those still exist is because those are catalysts for the kids that go on to play college sports and eventually professional sports. Where we fit in, where Endzone Sports fits in, I think is a little different. We are more on the recreational, on the leisure side. We've developed NCAA talent, kids that have gone on to play Division I football and soccer. That's never been the intent of our program. But what happens is with our leagues, they do become like any program. You can have all the best intentions of rewarding and rewarding for things like values and teamwork and good sportsmanship and leadership. But at the end of the day, competition starts to become more and more a factor. And that's fine. We're not the kind of program that gives away a participation trophy to every kid. There is a championship. You've got a first and second place team every season. But we try to stress the important values behind sports as well. 90% of kids don't get rewarded for their accomplishments on the field. To level that playing field so every kid builds confidence in sports, we do award things like our values award, which a coach gives an award, but it's not based on scoring 3 touchdowns or 4 goals in a game. It's based on whatever the value is that day. Those 4 values I just mentioned, we rotate those. So we try to keep those at the forefront, but it is difficult. You know, we've got plenty of parents. We're not exempt from parents that think that, you know, there are scouts every Saturday out at our leagues. And last time I checked, there's been very few that have ever come out to our programs. That's our biggest thing we combat is parents and parent behavior, expectations, and parents that want to put themselves above what's best for kids. We see it all the time. And I'm sure when we were kids, that was part of the equation as well. It just seems like the temperature in youth sports has amped up. And I just saw a video clip the other day of kid rounding third, coming home and called out. Third base coach comes down the line, gets in the face of the umpire. Umpire takes a swing at the coach. Now the first base coach and the head coach come out and we've got melee. And those things happened before, I'm sure. We weren't exempt, like I said, from that behavior. But it just seems like every time you're out at a field on a Saturday, you're going to have somebody that has to be that parent. They need to be seen. They need to be heard. And, you know, when we started Endzone Sports, I was that person running a brand new sports program. They cared nothing more than to make everybody happy. And I think that's still the important thing that we focus on. But you start to see the good and the bad. There are people that come out to the program, and whether it's your policy to be there for the kids and be supportive, whether that's the policy or not, they could care less, and they're going to be seen and heard. The difference is, over time, we deal with these people, and we encourage our location directors to make sure that's addressed, right? I mean, we've all had horror stories of what's happened when we were in youth sports or when we coached our kids. The most unfortunate thing about it is most instances, those are never dealt with. Nothing against Little League Baseball, but there's typically not a main person out there to enforce conduct or policy of parent behavior. So when I coached my son, that's what led me to start End Zone Sports is we went and watched the older brother of a teammate that I was coaching, my son's teammate. This kid was really good. He was a pitcher. We went and watched him play in a championship game 20 minutes away representing our league in a kind of regional playoff. And these are nine-year-old kids. And we were sitting in the bleachers. It was after church on a Sunday. I'll never forget it. There was a chant that started. It was the Indians and the Yankees that are playing each other. The chant started on the opposite first base sideline, which was the Indian sideline. And they started chanting, "Yankees suck. Yankees suck." And this is the whole parent base in the bleachers. And I'm just kind of watching it. I'm just like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, it was unfortunate, but I'm just like, you know, at that point, I was a youth sports coach in Little League Baseball and another sport that my son was playing. But my son looked at me, and mind you, he was a pretty good little athlete at the time. I was the only kid I could put at shortstop that could make that throw over to first base accurately. So I didn't want to be that dad to put your kid in prominent spots and everything. But the fact was he made good throws and he was fast and he could make outs, which is great when you're 7 and 8 in baseball. So my son looked at me and he's like, "Dad, why are they doing that?" And I didn't have an answer for him. And I'm just like, "Yeah, that's pretty sad." And he's like, "Man." And it impacted him so much so that later that day, he made a comment to me. He's like, "I'm not so sure I want to play baseball anymore." And I'd never looked at my son as if anything, he was the kid that was the hard-nosed competitor. If he was losing, he was, you know, snot coming out of his nose and mad and angry. So he wasn't necessarily a soft kid, but it impacted him enough to where he'd seen enough from baseball parent. And he made the decision he didn't want to play baseball anymore. And that was a difficult one because I love baseball. It's one of my favorite sports. Having coached in a program at that time, I was also coaching flag football in a nearby program. And one of the kids' parents I became friends with, and he approached me around the holidays. It was around Christmas time and we were out having a drink, and he said, "Let's start our own sports program." And I laughed about it and I said, "Yeah, that would be fun to do." And he's like, "Oh, I'm serious." So the idea grew on me. After about 2 weeks, I kind of went back to him and I said, "Let's talk." So we put the program together, which eventually began with a flag football program here locally in the Tampa area, thus the name End Zone, a play on the football term. And then in the second and third season, we began to expand into other sports, never really thinking this would be a franchise concept until about year three. And I had some background in the industry, which then allowed me to kind of expand at that level and begin in neighboring towns in Florida and then expand out in the Southeast. And then now we're as far out west as Oregon and California.
Nice.
You have heard from so many exciting franchise brands in a podcast, and you may be sitting there thinking about which ones could be the best fit for you. If this is the case, give us a call. We provide a free consulting service to prospective small business owners like yourself, and we will help you take a disciplined approach to determining which brands could be the best fit for you. Call or text us at 561-277-3710. Or visit www.franosity.com. That's www.franosity.com. We look forward to hearing from you.
So you started, and I appreciate all the background and how you got here. So you got here really through bad parenting, no decorum, no respect for the kids and the players and the teams. I'm just curious. I don't want to spend a lot of time on bad parenting, but I agree with you. You're saying that to the right guy. I've always said, I think you and I may be the same or similar age. I'm a Gen X, 72 baby. And I truly believe that our generation will go down as the worst parents in the history of parenting. We created the most entitled, the shittiest little kids that any any country and any generation could possibly produce. They're weak, they're entitled, they're bratty, they have no respect, they're lazy, they're fat, they're going nowhere. This is what my generation raised. Everyone gets a trophy. The teachers are always wrong. The students always right. The coach sucks. My player is a rock star. It's unbelievable. The script has been flipped, and at the detriment of these kids, and these parents don't know it yet. Your kid's not prepared for life. So you then go out, right? I mean, let's just say it how it is. It's the reality. I've said it before. I see it every day. I had a neighbor walk past my wife and I going for a walk with a little kid, and they walk by and we go, good morning. Remember, you're passing them. You're on a sidewalk. You're basically grazing their clothing, right? We say, good morning. And then we could hear the mother say, you're not in the mood to say good morning. I don't blame you. And they keep walking. There is your problem, right? Instead of saying, excuse me, turn around. This is our neighbor. Say good morning, right? Set him straight. And that's not how it works today. So you then create this brand. You start with football. We met last week, in full disclosure, with Dana, a fantastic human being, right? Dana Hansen. Apparently, you two are like, I don't know if you're childhood friends, but it sounded like a long friendship.
Yeah, Dana and I worked together a long time ago, and then he actually brought me into the franchise world over 20 years ago. So I was eager to repay him and bring him in as a partner in our company because he's just a great human being, but he's one of the most influential people in the franchise industry, I feel.
That's great. I couldn't agree more. So one of the things that really stuck with me was how you went after preschool. Tell us how you started. Tell us the sports or programs that are offered. Get kind of level set End Zone as a franchise opportunity for the listener.
When we first started franchising in 2011, the gentleman that Dana and I worked for at the time was a multi-franchisor. So he operated in the tutoring space, senior care, and in the computer service industry. Had a conglomerate of probably 800 to 1,000 franchise units. Still a very successful brand. Dana and I, for a number of years, I went to that gentleman and I said, look, I've got a concept. It's a home-based model, low overhead, extremely high upside and potential. I know the model. I've lived it here for the last 2.5 years on a part-time basis. Let's team up together on this. So he brought End Zone Sports into the fold of his program mix, right? The difference was it wasn't his baby like the other three concepts. So we lasted under that partnership for about 4 years until we just decided that we were going to kind of amicably split. Some of our resources are still shared to this day, from department to accounting. We still have some shared resources that the companies kind of utilize together. We realized in about 2013, about 2 years into this, that we had a good thing going, right? You have some competitors that are operating sports leagues in the franchise space, but we needed something that was a differentiator. At that time, preschool programming was coming onto the scene. There was one national, large, dominant player. Aside from that, we really didn't have a whole lot of competition in the space. So we agreed that on Saturdays, it's typically your window of operating sports leagues, right, for kids. But Monday through Friday, in addition to preparing and doing all the legwork and all the logistics behind making that league happen, if people want to full-time go at this, there needs to be something to capture Monday through Friday. What operates Monday through Friday? Preschools operate. And we looked and said, no other concept is combining both Saturday or Sunday weekend sports programs and leagues that are on the recreational side. When we award a franchise partner or a franchise owner their territory, it includes access to be able to do all of our programming from youth sports leagues, camps, what we call academies, but also the preschool program, which operates mostly predominantly at local preschools. We do Saturday programming for these kids, preschoolers, at a venue or a location similar to a sports league. The curriculum and everything is really more like the classroom setting because it's not a league. It's not competition-based. It's instruction-based. And there's 96, 98% of our target audience in a community is outside of the preschools we serve. So we're missing that market. Kids that don't go to the preschools that we're in that maybe would like to participate in our End Zone Junior program. So we do offer in most markets Saturday programs for the little kids that are under that same guise. And then also Monday through Friday, preschools that we work with and team up with, where one day a week we'll go out and provide instruction, whether it be flag football, soccer, t-ball, basketball, golf, scoops, which is like lacrosse, but the ball's on the ground. So kids, I can see too many kids with a wicket and stick throwing ball through the air and catching it. So easier for them, hand-eye coordination, to scoop a ball off the ground and play on a goal that way. So it's kind of like field hockey. We have, in addition to golf and miniature golf and tennis, we have a total of 12 sports that we can offer at preschools or as part of that end zone junior program. So the key there is variety, introducing kids to a number of different sports opportunities. By the time these kids are 4 and 5, their IQ for sports, and not just sports, but being able to share a ball with somebody else. First time you play on a sports team is a learning experience, not just athletically, but socially, right? So when kids are introduced to sports in a fun way, they pick it up and they learn it, but they develop self-confidence and self-esteem in that sport if we've done it the right way. By the time they're 6 and 7, they're just more prepared for those sports and for competition. Because if we've done our job the right way, they've learned the boundaries of sports. They understand what direction we go. We change directions, right? In soccer, we don't use our hands. So we're learning these things at age 3, not at age 6 and 7. It's expediting kids. If parents can cooperate, it's leading to more of an enjoyment of sports and sports development for kids to be able to hopefully enjoy sports for the rest of their lives.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking at that age, hand-eye coordination, strengthening bones and muscles and fine-tuned motor skills. I mean, we're starting to see obesity and type 2 diabetes in these young ages now, let alone the things that you just mentioned, learning how to compete, learning how to be part of a team, learning how to win and lose.
Funny you say that. I was in our production plant where we have an option where, you know, if a franchise partner wants their apparel from us, we can produce it for them at a super competitive rate. But we also give them autonomy to be able to choose where to get their goods and supplies. If they want jerseys locally and have those sourced, great. So we're quite a bit more open to them forging relationships and their supply chain coming from what's best for them, not us getting product, marking it up, and selling it back to them. So I was just in our production plant, and it's not a huge plant. I don't want to make it seem like it's as 50,000 square foot, but it's a place where a studio where we do jerseys for our franchise partners. One of the folks in there, I was walking through yesterday, and she made that same comment. It's amazing. On this team, which they have the rosters in front of them, when they're breaking them out, they put all the jerseys together, bundle them up for the franchise partner by team and ship them out. There's a team of 5 to 7 year olds, and most of the jerseys are youth small, youth medium, and there's an adult medium in there. There's a 7-year-old somewhere wearing an adult medium. Now, I pray that that's just a mistake that the parent made.
Justin, you brought up obesity a couple of times. I mean, it's an epidemic. I have some data points on obesity. This was done by The Lancet. In the past 3 decades, childhood obesity in the United States has tripled just in adolescents and more than doubled in children. Like, the numbers are startling. When I was a kid, 1975, there were 11 million children on the globe between ages 5 and 19 with obesity. Today, 125 million children are obese. There is 20% of U.S. children. That's 1 in 5. 1 in 5 kids in the United States are obese. It's frightening.
You know, we talk about the kids, Cliff. I mean, it's not like the adults. It's not like your generation and my generation are doing much better. 25% of adults out there get enough exercise to be healthy or physically fit. And there's a lot of people that say, well, you know, I don't like to exercise. And forget that. You don't have to be a marathon runner. Like, that's why sports like pickleball now that are becoming popular. Get outside, break a sweat, get your heart rate up a little bit, hit a ball, do something. And that's why I like what Tony's doing. It's not about fitness and gyms. It could be recreational. Go join a team and get outside and freaking move. Get off the couch. Kids, adults, go move. Get off your ass.
Yep. And we do adult sports too, which I wish we did it more. I wish it was more of a thing with us. But since we're in the market for sports, our primary focus is obviously on the youth. But we do adult sports leagues in several markets that we're in And that's a whole different beast altogether, but you're right. The obesity rate everywhere. And it comes down to, for whatever reason, people can't say no, whether it's to their kids. They just can't say no. You know, I mean, I didn't have the greatest diet when I was a kid, but if I could have eaten hot dogs every day and sat on the couch with a bag of Doritos every day and eat, I may have. We weren't presented with that option. It was get outside and the door might be locked. You know, like just stay out and go play.
I tell my parents all that there were so many years in Long Island is highly competitive with baseball and wrestling and football. We had some incredible athletes that I grew up with. And it's hard to compete and stay confident as other kids are growing faster and they're stronger than there were so many years that I just wanted to stop. My parents wouldn't let me. It's like, no, you're going to continue to play baseball and compete. Keep working hard, keep training, keep practicing. And I'm so happy that they did now. I am. Like, I would have quit. If it was up to me, I would have quit when I was a kid.
Most do. 70% of children drop out.
Crazy. What's amazing is there'll be a lot of parents that'll come out to our leagues and then you'll see them. They may come up to our canopy at a location, at any given location. I've seen this a number of times and they'll say, well, what's the refund policy? And you'll say, okay, what happened? And they're like, it's just not really liking it. Okay, well, and if I'm ever out at our locations and I hear this, I'm certainly, far be it for me to give a ton of advice to parents, but one thing I am pretty passionate about is when parents want to throw the towel in for their kid and the kid's made a commitment to play on a team, I'm not the person that you want to be talking to at that point.
You made a commitment, stick with it. Yep.
It's almost like a shock when you tell that to some of these people. You're like, look, you signed up to play. Not only are you letting your kid down here by even entertaining this thought of him quitting, but think about what message you're sending to your kid, that any time when you start something, you can just drop it and walk away from it. It's amazing how many parents just say, yeah, well, I understand.
A lot of parents, Tony, to your point, though, there is a group of kids that are like, this is work. I'm sweating. This is hard. I want to give up. But equally, there's another camp where the parents are so lazy and so selfish because they'd rather be on Facebook or something.
Right. The parents say, I don't want you to do this either. If you're out, I've been dying for you to be out of this.
Yeah. I took 4 selfies in the car while you were playing. I'm a loser too. I've seen the lazy parent. I've seen the parent talk down to the sport or look for a reason to be angry with a coach or look for a reason to be upset that we're traveling too far and it's getting too expensive. And yeah, I've seen it. I think there's a lot to unpack there. There's a lot of lessons, long life lessons about commitment and team and sticking it out, being a person of your word, seeing things through to the end. So much there. This is a, just for the audience, this is a $15 billion business, right? Youth sports, $15 billion and growing at around 3-4% per year. Over 60 million children participate in organized youth sports in the United States. 60 million. Like, you think of these numbers, just crazy. Just the travel revenue alone in sports is $10 billion. You think about it, what is one of the big complaints about it? I was in travel. I know Justin was in travel. It's expensive, requiring airplanes and hotels. $10 billion business. The average, Justin made a comment about revenue. There was a line that I read which said, when you pay more, you play more. So if you're willing to put up the money, it really is. It has gotten to a place, maybe not at the level of End Zone, but when you get involved in travel, the average family was spending $650 a year just in sport activities. And that's not including traveling, obviously. That's an airline ticket. So we spent a lot of time on like obesity and child health. And I think that's all the negative stuff. There's a lot to talk about with the benefits of being in these programs. I don't know if you saw that study they did with 20 children where they had 20 children MRI just sit and do nothing. Then they had they brain scan, and then they had the same 20 children go out and run around and do something. And all the neuro activity they saw when you're just active, it prepared them better for laser focus on test taking. Clarity, behavior improved. How can't behavior improve if you take an amped up kid, right? Throw him out in a field, run around, and it's like, hey, come back to second class, right?
We have 5-year-old kids sitting in a classroom for 8 hours and they can't fidget.
And just give him a pill. Oh, that's what it's about.
Your kid's hyperactive. No, he's not. He's a normal, healthy boy.
Yeah. And the answer is, let's not give them an opportunity to run around and burn some steam off and, you know, all the brain activity you mentioned. Let's defund the entire budget for physical fitness and activity in schools, right?
Tony, does Randy Weingarten strike you as someone that gives a shit about sports?
Only 8 in 50 states now require physical education.
We've had episodes like this before with music and with art. They know it works. That's why they kill it. It's intentional. They want to weaken an entire generation, and they're doing it. It's like, wait a minute, sports helps? Kill it. Recess helps. Exactly, kill it. Art helps? Yeah, it helps with creativity in the brain. Kill it.
We can't make money off of sick kids, right?
No. Is there a vaccine for this? No. All right, well then let's not talk about it. It's the truth. It's frightening, but it's true.
I'm just going to say real quick, that's one of the initiatives we have right now. That's the latest thing that we're doing, is we're partnering up with school districts and going in and providing either PE programming, not just in schools, but especially now it's becoming more and more popular, which is homeschools. In order to meet certain criteria, there has to be some kind of physical fitness initiative. So we're organizing that and bringing kids together in communities to do actual little mini leagues on a Wednesday afternoon. Just get the activity going. And that's both after school programming and in school in session days. PE departments are being, you know, they're losing their funding left and right, like you mentioned. You hit it on the head there. It's very unfortunate.
Let's get back to your brand. What is the revenue generated from, if we compartmentalize the activities and where you perform the service, starting with like preschools, what percentage of my revenue would come from operating this business in the preschool?
Great question. And a caveat to that would be, when you first start out with Endzone Sports, we do ask people very early on, even before they purchase and secure their franchise, we find out what side of the business is more appealing to you at this moment. Is it the sports leagues or is it the preschool side? Because we made a mistake years ago allowing people to just start your business, do whatever you want, do both, do all three model revenue streams and models. And people were overwhelmed with that because all three of our models, especially the leagues and the junior preschool programs, very different, polar opposite types of businesses. One involves competition in actual league play. The other has nothing to do with that and involves at a very young age working with kids, creating a lot of hype and excitement and teaching them motor skills, hand-eye coordination, all the things we talked about. So they're very different. So to start out with, to your question directly, 100% of their revenue is going to come from one of the two, right? Because they're going to tell us which side of the business they want to begin with. For example, in one of the markets to Charlotte right now, we have a franchise that's focusing on bringing a youth sports league to that community. So all effort and push right now is on promotion, marketing, logistics, a 13-week plan to get that franchise partner ready and prepared to launch opening day for their sports league. So all revenue coming in is league related, okay? Conversely, with our Enzo Junior program, when we're going into the preschools, we're doing little gift drop, basket drops. That's an easy question because 100% of the revenue is going to come from whichever. Exactly. And then within, typically on a, you know, if somebody's really aggressive and wants to do this full time, within 6 to 12 months, we're beginning to open up options to do the other side of the business. But we have a game plan of how to maintain and scale the first part while we begin venturing into the other side of the business.
Tony, talk to me about, I'm not clear on like the revenue. Could we just succinctly go through let's start with the league. Okay. Is everything a profit center? They pay a fee to join. It's a profit center. They buy a jersey. It's a profit center. The venue I have is a profit. Pay X for the venue. I charge Y for the event. Talk to me about how you've monetized creating a league in a community. How do I make money as the franchisee?
That's a great question. And for most people, just like you're asking, they have no clue how that works. Here's kind of in a nutshell, the 60-second answer to that. So when all the different things you mentioned, all the logistics, whether it's uniforms, referees, venues, there's a cost to us, or in this case, the franchise owner, to invest or secure all those different elements of the business. The registration would be revenue, right? So on one side, we've got our revenues of registration. Let's say it's $150. And on the other side, we've got a column of all our expenses, which I mentioned, and there could be many, many more expenses, insurance, right? To be able to be on a ground that we don't own and indemnify the people that own that. So we're required to have insurance. There's a number of supplies, right? Those all fall under our expenses, right? So your expenses are typically, when the franchise owner follows the plan the right way, expenses are going to amount to a little less than half of the total revenue that's collected. So we use that example of $150 registration to play in a season, an 8 or 10 week season. About $70 of that is expense related. And the remaining amount left over would be your gross profits.
Like the schools, are the schools saying you can play on our property? Or no, they want a fee for that.
Yeah, it's a rental. In almost every case, it's a rental. And in fact, if I'm more on the support side than on the development. Dana's on the development end. What we see mostly, I get a little bit nervous when I find out somebody, and it's the best day of their life when a franchise owner finds out that they don't have to pay at a church or at a school. Clarksville, Tennessee, the school said, yeah, come on out and you guys don't have to pay. There's always something on the other side of that. We have an event with 500 people today. You didn't tell us. Well, I'm sorry, we're here and it's our school. Great. So now we got to tell 700 people that we're not playing today. So I'll take a field rental and pay to use and secure that space because I know it's ours for that period of time. We have a contract, it's in writing. So sometimes that's a little bit of a tough pill to swallow for a franchise partner. Look, just understand going into this, it sounds like the greatest deal going, but when you show up next Saturday for your first day of your league and the grass is 12 inches long, they don't care. They don't give a damn. It's on you. You're playing there for free. You take care of it. There's a lot of things, you know, that you don't really realize when something is free that are unintended consequences. Typically, we pay that can be an hourly rate or it can be, I know in the Orlando area, we're kicking off this weekend and we're paying about $3,500 for an 8 week program, right? And that'll go from typically we get out there at about 6:30, 7 o'clock a.m. to set up everything, whether it's soccer goals and all that. And then we'll be done by about 3:34 in the afternoon. So on an hourly rate, it breaks down to, you know, in most markets, somewhere between $25 to $50 per hour. Where it gets a little more expensive is court space. If we're playing basketball or indoor soccer, starts getting up there a little bit. When you come indoors, it's just naturally the cost goes up. So we do pay more. Our rates tend to be a little higher for indoor sports than outdoor because our costs are high. But that's kind of how that fits together into the equation with revenue expense type side with player registration.
That's impressive, Justin. Your gross margins are 50%.
A lot of work, but I'll tell you what, there's very little overhead in our business.
Yeah, sounds very profitable using other people's real estate to operate the business.
Tony, when I first heard about this, my initial thought was, man, like, I don't know that I would want to create a league that competes with Little League or, you know, what is CYO, like some of the church organ, like some of these are really buttoned up, very well-known brands. So like, man, okay, so the preschool seems like the low-hanging fruit. And I do like the preschool program a lot, but hearing this, like we're not necessarily competing with Little League. We're creating leagues for other things that may not be organized nationally, like flag football and t-ball or tennis, or like you could do. We actually had a client invest in your brand recently. I don't know if you know that. And I think one of the things that he liked about them was there's so many things that he could do. Like it doesn't have to be a specific sport. You can kind of create leagues for all sorts of sports and events that, because I can hear people saying, oh, we already have that here. We already have leagues here.
That's the biggest misnomer. You know, the fact of the matter is we didn't invent youth sports. It's been around way before we got here on the stage. There's a ton of children that are on the sidelines right now that aren't playing. 83% of our participants in a brand new market are first time players. So what you'll find with, especially like you mentioned, Little League or Pop Warner, let's talk baseball for just a second. Baseball is not a sport we really do outside of T-ball. We can transform a end zone sideline and back line of an end zone into a third and first base line. And little kids that are 3, 4, 5, and 6 aren't hammering the ball 300 feet into people on another field. So we can play T-ball. Where it starts getting difficult is baseball, the logistics around baseball, right? You've got clay, you've got catcher's gear, you've got helmets, balls for every team. You've got a tremendous amount of equipment. Chalk is part of the game. Where are you storing all this stuff, right? So you need a baseball complex to do baseball. You can't just pull up a pasture or grass or a school athletic field and just go to town with a baseball league. Baseball is an untimed sport. So it doesn't mean you can't put a clock to it, but there's so many logistics around baseball that make it a very difficult sport to do on a rec level if you don't own a baseball diamond. And most baseball diamonds are occupied. If they're not, you don't want to go near them. They don't look like clay. They look like overgrown, you know, just a terrible place where you wouldn't want to play. That's kind of always been our thing, is finding that logistical side to it. Those sports can be done in a confined space and repeatable hour after hour after hour, right? Equipment needs aren't as great. Our soccer goals pop up that are really impressive looking goals, pop back down in a small bag you carry and put them in your trunk. We've dealt with that side of it and honed in on what sports are best.
Well, it's just that, right? So just because, again, I can hear the people at home saying to themselves, you know, we're competing against Little League. I don't want to have to go up against them. There's all sorts of programs you can offer that don't have national brands like Little League Baseball.
Yeah, and his market's not playing anyway. I love that stat. 80% are new. It's like this, we're creating new users of the sport. We're not cannibalizing from a competitor.
I don't want to have to strap on pads and pop water and get hit by some 300-pound eight-year-old. I just want to play flag football and have some fun.
The other part of that is a lot of these programs that we're talking about just aren't very good marketers, right? They could be great programs, solid, great group of board of directors. They just aren't interested in maximizing their participation. If we're not successful, if we're not profitable, we go out of business. If a lot of these entities don't, they have funds and they're tied to purse strings where they can continue on. If we're not great, if we're not excellent, and we don't make people happy, not only do they not come back, but we go out of business. So we've got to be great. We've got to be exciting. We've got to come into this with an amazing amount of energy. So when we come into a brand new market, people call, we're going to answer the phone. And if we don't answer right then, we're going to call you back in 2 minutes. We're going to ask about your kid, if they've played sports. When I was a board member with the Little League Baseball program I coached in, we all would take turns when we were at the field returning people's phone calls. Nobody wanted to go near the trailer because that light was flashing. You had to return a person's phone call, right? But if my business relies on me bringing people in, I'm going to be there front and center. And that experience makes us that contrast is very different. When people call and they're not used to people taking a special interest in engaging you on the phone, that makes a difference, right? So we've got to be better than the competition. Fortunately, the bar is set very, very low with regard to customer satisfaction in the end.
Cliff, $75,000 investment, non-brick and mortar, very few employees, recurring revenue, 50%+ gross profit margins. You talk about making a meaningful impact on your community. It's a fun business, very affordable. I mean, I don't know many brands that you can get into for $75,000 anymore in franchising.
Well, yeah, there are cheap brands. They just have no upside. I like the asymmetrical investments, like low investment with a lot of upside.
Earning potential on a sub 100K investment.
That's what we look for. That's attractive. Average sales in the middle 75th percentile for your brand, $390,000.
That's what brought Dana over. I had lunch with Dana one day, and I just brought, you know, a monthly and quarterly overview of revenues of each franchise owner. And I said, I just want to share this with you because it had been increasing and growing and scaling pretty aggressively. So I had been trying to land Dana for years and years. The fact of the matter is I just couldn't afford him. I brought this to lunch and I showed it to him, and I knew I had him on the hook when he was kind of speechless for about a minute or two looking at it. And he kind of looked up at me and he goes, "Is this all legit? This is all real?" I'm like, "No, I made up half of them just because I wanted you to really be impressed." So he was pretty blown away because he came from a concept that all in was about $300,000 to $400,000 when you include the fleet of vehicles and the overhead and everything. Their franchise partners were if they were making more than ours, it wasn't by much. So he was kind of blown away, and he knew it was time to talk more. So,
and junk isn't nearly as fun as sports.
We're approaching the hour. Justin, you want to do a little trivia? What's the most popular sport for youth sports? Is it basketball, baseball, or soccer?
In the U.S.?
Actually. Yes, in the U.S. What's more popular, basketball, baseball, or soccer?
I want to say baseball, but I know it's going to be like soccer is becoming very popular.
I'm going to go a different direction. I'm going to say basketball because I think it's a twist here a little bit. I think it's a trick question.
3.97 million kids play basketball versus 3.3 million baseball players versus 2.2 million soccer players.
Yep. All the kids that aren't athletic enough and don't have the hand-eye coordination to play baseball.
Okay. What in youth sports, what had the largest percentage increase in new, you know, attendees to the sport?
Soccer.
Justin, you can re-answer. This is just sports. There are two sports that have a significant double-digit increase in participation. What are they?
Are they main sports or is it like pickleball?
You're close on the pickleball.
All right. Tennis.
Here's a hint. It's a very small ball. Golf, 49% increase. Tennis has increased 25%.
I thought the Tiger Woods effect has been wearing off.
I'll tell you what, that was a sport I played in college, and I was in the gym lifting weights, and everybody was like, you're an idiot. Golfers don't lift weights. And Tiger comes along, and 2 years later, this guy completely changed 1,000% of the sport and has done so much for golf.
It's unreal. Lacrosse actually seems to be the game for the wealthy. Seems like household income needs to be over 100 grand to play lacrosse.
You know, we've tried to do it. We tried to add it, and we're like, to cheap it down a little bit, we give away a cheap stick with a head that's plastic, and we play with a tennis ball and goggles like females do, right? They don't wear full pads and helmets in female. They typically wear goggles. So we tried to do that, but yeah, it's expensive.
Yeah, it seems to be reserved for the upper middle class from the data that I've seen. Justin, have we properly presented the brand? I feel like we spent a lot of time on obesity and kids, which is fine. You're the elixir to their problems, right? The benefits of being in your program, you know, just behavior, school, students, friendship, leadership, right? Camaraderie, make a friend. Don't be less lonely than your neighbor child. These kids are lonely, man. This is the loneliest generation ever in the history of kids. They got to engage in these sports. They don't realize all the things that they could do to be better.
There's a lot to do. Parents need to get their kids involved in these programs. And if anyone out there has questions or wants more information on Endzone, reach out to us. Let's have a conversation and we'll get them in touch with Dana and Tony.
Yeah.
Guys, appreciate it. We can always come back. Happy to have another conversation with you guys. You guys are awesome. And I think, like you guys said, have a lot in common with you guys. Love your style. And this has been great.
Appreciate you coming on, Tony.